Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good day, everybody. We want to welcome you to this week's edition of Here's to Your Health. I'm your co-host, Dr. Ron Epley. And with me, as usual, is our co-host, Dr. Shane Goforth.
Righto.
See, did you hear what I said?
Remember, this is you took it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is, remember, this is a call-in show, so we encourage everybody to give us a call. That number is 347-989-8722. So if you can give us a call, we'll try to get you on the air. Sometimes we just get too busy.
And maybe I'll take your thunder, too.
That's right.
Dr. Gold.
Go ahead.
I can't believe I did it. I'm sitting here at the last minute getting everything ready, and since my office is all torn up being redone, I feel discombobulated. So it's like even my thinking process a little bit.
I understand that. Every time I have moved my office or started in a new place, it's like, okay, what am I supposed to do? How am I doing? Yeah, it's crazy how our surroundings, we associate our surroundings with what we're doing. It helps us think. It's weird.
Yeah, it is. It's like, because everything has its place and everything's okay. You walk in and it's all calming and relaxing and there it is. And all of a sudden you got, oh my God. Yeah, I know. It's funny.
It's weird, huh?
But anyway, so even my radio show, I'm not 100% got everything printed out the way I wanted and organized, but that's just the chaos of the day. So anyway, so I'm going to start off with this one. Normally I like to start off with something a little bit more bang to it, but this one's okay. It says, an increasing number of adolescents receive a psychiatric or neurodevelopmental diagnosis.
Huh.
It says, according to the National Register study comparing Finnish birth cohorts from 1987 to 1997, an increasing number of adolescents received a psychiatric or neurodevelopmental diagnosis. The number of diagnosed adolescents increased, especially for girls in the younger cohort.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of crap.
The most diagnosis they received was for depression and anxiety.
Yep. How come everybody's always depressed anymore?
Well, I got one in here somewhere in my pile to talk about that, but I couldn't find it right away when I was looking through it. So hopefully, as the radio show goes on, I'll be able to bring that one out. But it's a pretty significant one on depression. But the reality is, you know as well as I do what it is they're over-medicalizing people. I mean, for every little tiny behavior that you do, now it's a medical diagnosis.
Right.
It's a disease. If your kid throws a temper tantrum, they're diseased.
Oh, yeah, completely. If they're not sitting there like a zombie in front of the, for the teacher, they got ADHD.
Yeah,
they need to be drugged.
And then we wanted to put them on a cell phone to occupy their time, right? So they're
right.
Watching little videos on the cell phone today. And that was perfectly fine but if they didn't want to do that, they were diseased. And now if they're on it, they're diseased. It's like no matter what you do, the kids have got, they need treatment, and we need to put them on an antidepressant. Any anxiety, because and then we have higher risk of suicide and homicidal behavior afterwards. We need to. I mean, that profession in particular needs a serious looking into as to what the heck are they doing to them.
I agree completely.
And how much of it might be political too, right? What I mean by that is the increasing numbers of people that have diagnosable mental disease. They want to be able to take away some of their rights, the right to bear arms and stuff like that, right?
Yep. Right.
And of course, you see the political thing about they want to make sure our president is unfit for office because he's mentally deficient or whatever, even though he passed the psychological exam, wasn't. But so how much of that part of medicine is being used as a weapon, right? I mean, I'm not really a conspiracy theorist, but you know what I'm going with, right?
I do know what you mean, but it's leaning towards that way. It's looking more and more like that all the time, doesn't it? I mean, it's one thing to be a conspiracy theorist, and it's another one to read the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
So,
Okay, so now guess what else is happening? Prescriptions during pregnancy are on the rise, and so are birth defects. The CDC CDC warns women to avoid antibiotics, even if their doctor says it's safe. This is not the first time we've seen antibiotics associated with birth and health problems, right?
Right.
Said in a newly published study, the Center for Disease Control warned pregnant women that antibiotics can cause harm to developing babies after finding the doctors are prescribing the problematic drug at higher rates than in the past. So, Dr. Goforth, I got a question. Maybe you're a pretty smart guy. Maybe you got an answer because I don't. Is that if our healthcare system is getting smarter and better, and we got better science and better everything than before, and our education system is the best it's ever been, why are doctors prescribing something more that they shouldn't be?
I don't know. Because I've been on that same question, same line of thinking. My question was, what happened to the Hippocratic Oath? Are they not taking that anymore? You know, first, do no harm? I mean, that's like the first thing in it, right? The first line, first above all else, do no harm. That's like, and what are they doing? They keep doing harm, especially to pregnant people, pregnant ladies. They get, it's aggravating. Gets my blood pressure up.
Yeah, I know. I had to take my blood pressure pill this morning because I knew I was going to go up after reading that stuff. But, you know, I know. It's so aggravating to me that I can hardly even contain myself. And again, it goes along with the first one. All of the increasing number of kids are being diagnosed with mental health problems or developmental disorders so they can be prescribed more medication.
Right.
Is that the only way we can help people is with medications? It seems like that's it, right?
That's the way it's going. That's what it seems like.
God, it's awful.
It is awful.
Well, let's go into the pregnancy thing again. Here's another study. This one won't make my blood pressure go up. It says 30-year study shows women who breastfed for 6 months or more reduce their own diabetes risk.
Nice.
This was published in the Journal of the American Association of Internal Medicine. So, you know, this is the way I explain it to women. You know, I try to keep religion out, but sometimes it's kind of hard not to, because it's so easy to describe it.
Right.
It's almost like God told you, here's a health benefit for you if you nurse your children. I will reduce your risk of getting diabetes.
Yep.
You will live healthier and longer if you just do this. That's what I gave these things to you for.
Right.
You know what I mean?
They're not only aesthetic, they're functional.
Yeah. If you use them the way they are intended to be used, you will live a healthier, longer life.
Right.
But if you don't, there's no telling what's going to go happen with you.
Yep.
Oh, here's one I wanted to start off with. There it is. That's the one I was looking for earlier. Deaths from synthetic opioids have risen from 3,000 to over 20,000 in just 3 years.
Synthetic opioids?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I heard that right.
Yeah, and if you just put opioids in there too, then combine them together and you begin to see it. So anyway, according to the report, opioid overdoses killed as many as 64,070 Americans in 2016 alone.
Huh.
Did you read that number, Shane? Dr. Goforth, 64,000 people died from overdose.
Wow. In 1 year. And that's just an overdose.
That's just overdose.
Man. Yeah. And we say like, just overdose. But no, I mean, that's crazy. 64,000 people in 1 year. That's a lot of people.
Okay, listen to the numbers just to put it into perspective. You and I already got the perspective, but homicide deaths in 1901 were 24,700.
Yeah.
AIDS-related deaths in 1995 were 50,000. Car crash fatalities in 2015 were 35,000. all-time suicide rates at 25 were 44,000. The entire Vietnam War, 35,000.
Wow. That's nuts. 35,000 people in the Vietnam War died compared to 67,000 just from opioid.
Yep.
About
I know.
Overdose. Which is crazy.
I know. I know, and they don't seem to be taking the blame. No one seems to be going to jail. No one seems to be convicted of murder or anything. You know what I mean? Well, I'm not saying no one. We've done reports where a few of them have. But,
right.
And again, we saw, we should just do a show on this one. But we did see at one time reports where the medical profession was trying to not take any blame. They were trying to say that people were getting into their parents' prescription drugs and kids were getting into them.
Right.
And they had no culpability whatsoever. And then, you know, I think just last week we talked about that for headaches, which opioids have not been proven to do any good at all, in the emergency room gives people opioids for a headache.
Right. Boy, that seems like a thing to do. That seems so smart.
And I think
do that.
Yeah, and I got another thing in here on opioids about how people are getting them. I got another one in here. It's just that the mess of my stuff isn't ready yet.
Right.
Anyway. Okay. So, it hit to the head, not concussions, that cause chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So researchers have identified evidence of early chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is a brain prep pathology, after head impact, even in the absence of signs of concussion. Says early indicators of CTE pathology not only persisted long after the injury, but also spread through the brain, providing the best evidence to date that head impact, not concussion, causes CTE.
Right.
That's actually really even scarier.
Yeah, it is. That's what I thought, too, when I heard that. I was like, oh, crap. That's really bad.
Yeah, because we have no way to detect that, right? At least,
right.
Yeah, but at least with a concussion, you could go, oh, look at the guy's laying down on a field. He's out cold. Take him out, help him recover, you know, do whatever treatment needs to be necessary to help the guy or girl. And now, if it's just a head impact, oh, my God, I think I watched part of a football game yesterday, and when was there no head impact, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the question.
Okay, so...
pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, so here we go. Paleolithic diet is healthier for overweight women.
Yep.
It says overweight women after menopause who eat a paleolithic diet can maintain weight loss in the long term. The level of risk factors of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular diseases also decrease. Well, we should just take off for that one, because talking about it forever, right?
Right. I know. That's what we're telling people all the time, every day, seems like.
Yeah, I know. Now it's getting, it wasn't so bad for a while because, in a way, paleo was a little faddish. But now there's a new diet that's sort of the fad going around. And it's called ketogenic diet.
Yes, ketogenic.
So now it's harder to talk to people about the diet. It's like, well, I want to do the keto, and I'll do the paleo.
Right. I haven't looked into the ketogenic one at all, but
well,
I should.
I haven't really read any what they're talking about now, but you know, that's kind of what fasting does for people, put them into ketosis a little bit, and also higher fat puts them into ketosis. And I don't have too much of a problem with the ketogenic diet. A little bit, you know, it's probably healthy for us to go into ketosis periodically. With periodic fasts. I'm not sure if I really like it. in the as a way to let me lose weight, let me get in better fitness, let me get my health back. But again, I haven't read enough about it yet to do that. I'm just a little bit skeptical of it.
Right.
Especially with this science right here. It says, low fitness is associated with a larger waist size and higher degree of inflammation.
Right.
Yeah. And so a higher degree of inflammation. So part of what we decided to do for people when we do our weight loss stuff or our body sculpting is we were going over what a proper detox would be and everything. And I just made up my mind that it's going to be it based on inflammation, because we see people in the clinic, and it's a little bit biased, right? A little bit.
Right.
Yeah, it's biased that we see people coming in pain, so they're inflammation. But I also run lab tests on everybody, and they're all inflamed, right?
Right.
And so, and also, inflammation is the underlying cause of almost all, or not underlying cause, but a contributing factor to almost all diseases that we're suffering from right now. So anyway, so I decided, and then I see this one right now, low fitness is associated with larger waist size and higher degree of inflammation. So if we want people to lose some weight, then helping them reduce, they're already inflamed, so maybe doing some inflammatory stuff with them at the same time will be beneficial.
Right. Certainly sounds like it might be.
Yeah, it also might be why when we do when I do detoxifications on people, I always do an inflammatory detoxification, right? Maybe that's one of the reasons why we get
right.
such good results with it, because, you know, I always do it because they're inflamed. Okay, here we go, Dr. G. It says, prebiotics in infant formula could improve learning and memory and alter brain chemistry.
Nice.
So, yeah, listen to this. Among other benefits, breast milk contains a natural source of prebiotics, which are small,
right.
indigestible fiber molecules that promote the growth of good bacteria in the baby's gut. Yet, for many families, breastfeeding is difficult or impossible. Fortunately, modern infant formulas are getting closer to the real thing with the help of the University of Illinois researchers. Okay, so they're getting closer. They're never going to be the same thing.
No. Close is fine, but it's not the same. It never will be.
Yeah, there hasn't been a study on infant formula showing that it reduces the risk of diabetes in the mom, does it?
Right.
So, you know,
right.
it's... so I just... It just cracks me up sometimes. So.
Right.
Now, I wouldn't mind. I don't really have a problem with formula. My wife nursed our kids for a year. And I don't have a problem with formula, per se, for the fact that some women do have real problems with
right.
nursing, right? But the fact is they're sent home from the hospital a lot of times with formula, and they're not really encouraged to nurse.
Right. Well, I think they're changing a little bit, because I know that when my daughter was my youngest daughter was born, they were encouraging it quite a bit. Not, you know, like not like pushing it real hard, but they were like, they're making sure that mom could take care of it and whatever. So I mean, there was some benefit. There was some promotion there. But yeah, still doesn't outweigh the formula promotion, though.
Yeah, what I'm getting with that is I wonder if, you know, during the women's quote-unquote Lamaze classes, are they teaching
right.
them the importance of breastfeeding?
Right.
I don't know
if they do Lamaze classes anymore.
Yeah, I know. But they do a lot of, they still do some classes. I wonder what they teach.
Right.
Okay, Dr. Goforth, be prepared for the backlash after I read the headline of this study. And this comes from Le Bon Heur Children's Hospital. I don't know where that's at, but... and it was published in the issue of Pediatrics, the journal Pediatrics. Okay, listen, I'm giving you a trigger warning.
Okay.
It says, black children black children face higher risk of death post-surgery than whites.
Huh.
Says a recent study has found that black children are more than twice as likely to die following surgery than white children, and describes race-specific models to predict surgical outcomes.
Right. Huh. That's interesting, though, actually. I mean, I understand what you were getting at with the trigger, but still it's kind of interesting.
No, because the surgeons are racist, that's why.
Oh, I know, right. I knew what you were saying. I wanted to say the other thing, because it's talking about, we see that all the time with different, black people are more susceptible to keloids than anybody else, and, you know, sickle cell anemia, and this and that and the other thing. So, I mean, they have other things where they don't get malaria or whatever, right? So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
There's differences.
I know. You and I are doctors, so we know there's a difference between their race-specific stuff that affects people, their sex-specific stuff that affects people, and it's just the social sciences that are all goofed up, as far as I'm concerned. But
right, I agree.
You know, but yeah. So this anyway, this isn't a big article, but it's certainly interesting that they're dying twice as much as white kids post-surgical. So it looks like they need to identify what those factors are and see if they can screen for them or prevent them. Right.
Right, yeah. Precisely.
Oh, I found the article I wanted to talk about earlier. There it is, right on top. Next page. It says this, Dr. G. It's that from the Canadian Medical Association, the Journal of the Canadian Medical Association. Here's what it says. This is pretty important stuff. It says flawed research methods exaggerate the prevalence of depression.
Yep. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Here's a summary of what it says. It says the common practice of using patient self-reported screening questionnaires rather than diagnostic interviews conducted by researchers has resulted in overestimates of the prevalence of depression, according to a new analysis.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and again, that's kind of. Yeah, I know. But you know, we knew that. That's what I was alluding to.
Right.
On the first thing that we were talking about earlier is the fact that we're over medicalizing everything. We're diagnosing people with diseases that don't have diseases, and I think part of what they try to do is they try to justify the stuff based on really poor science.
Oh, yeah, completely. Oh, yeah, this will work. Just do this. Well, you know what? I think a lot of it is that I can't say that, but it seems to be that they've gone with the MD's way of prescribing, you know, off-label. So, oh, yeah, this will work for that. Go ahead and do it. That'd be fine. You know?
Yep. Well, you know, too, is what I do. The patients, when they fill out paperwork, they write something just 5 minutes down on a piece of paper. Then when you have them in your desk and you ask them the same question, it's a different answer.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? So when they have depression questionnaires and the patients by themselves in the waiting room, you know, they probably, well, that's what they're saying there. They over-exaggerate their symptoms. Because we see it, you know. How bad is your pain from 0 to 10? They'll circle the 10, right? And then they come into your office and go, you know, 10 is the worst pain you've ever had in your entire life. Do you know what that was? And they go, oh, yeah, I passed a kidney stone. Well, compared to that, how bad is this? Oh, it's only about a 4. Oh, but you wrote 10.
Uh-huh. Oh, all right. I know. I've seen that too, yeah. You're right. It's funny, kind of.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Why
yeah.
did you write so that one down then?
Yeah, And when people, you know, the other thing is, like, we have them fill out things like comprehensive detoxification questionnaires, right? And
right.
It's just as cool as what I use it for, screening. But anyway, what you do is, again, when you get people sitting down and you ask them the question, is you go, wow, you got 268 points. The last person that filled it out had 67. We are really sick. And if you go through details and everything, and sometimes they way over-exaggerate stuff. Because if they're suffering from the symptom, we ask them, you know, what have they felt like in the last month, if you had any of these. And sometimes if they're suffering from a symptom right now, that gets over-exaggerated. And the one that happened 2 days ago, you know, it's like, yeah. So some of these subjective questionnaires have a little bit of flaws to them. So it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. So now I've got a question. Let me ask you another question. I'm going to, the all-knowing Dr. Shane, go for it. So, if this study just came out from the Canadian Medical Association, the Journal of the Canadian Medical Association, how many people, physicians that diagnose people with depression, are going to read this and change the way they do things?
Oh, I know that one. That's an easy one. Zero.
Oh, go ahead. Tell us. Zero. You know?
Zero.
Yeah. I know. I know.
It's just, I mean, it's just simple. It's an easy one to figure out.
Well, you know, it is a dilemma that we have in our society right now in healthcare and medicine, right? And the dilemma is, if tomorrow they invented something that would put you out of business as a healthcare professional, would you switch to that and go out of business, or would you fight like crazy to keep doing what you're doing even though it's wrong?
Right. Yeah, I'd have to switch.
Yeah, I would too. Well, you and I have somewhat switched the way we practice from when we were in college, right?
Yeah.
Not because
they
found that things are wrong, but we just found that, you know, there's a difference in the real world and then what you learn in college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And there's a difference. Yeah. You know, so we have changed a lot of what we do. And also we try to adopt, because we do the radio show, we try to adopt changes fairly as quickly as we possibly can, right? So, and we see, that's why patients come into us all the time and say, you know, you guys are about 10 years ahead of your time. Because we read this stuff, and we talk about it, we go, let's make some changes now. And sometimes it really sucks because no one else is making the changes. And then by the time the rest of the world keeps up, we're moved on to something else, and everybody's going, you know, Doc, I'm doing this. What do you think about that? Well, don't you remember I told you that 10 years ago? Oh, you know what? You're right. You did. Well, why didn't you do it then? I don't know. I waited until my neighbor told me something before I did it.
I love that one. Oh, so-and-so told me.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. My neighbor told me, and your neighbor's a doctor? No, they just, whatever. You know, a stitch digger or a plumber or whatever, you know? Really? Okay.
Okay, I found the other one I wanted to talk about. It was in my file. It's about opioids. Here's the other one. It says, patients received most opioids at the doctor's office, not the emergency room.
Yep. Shocking.
Yeah, it says, a new study analyzing where patients receive their prescription opioids is a hard look in the mirror for providers amid the opioid epidemic.
Right.
It's a question I asked you earlier. They're perfectly aware of this going on. In fact, I do not understand how they could have ignored this for decades or centuries, right? Because, you know, opium's been around forever. Heroin's been around for a long time. You know, we've known the harms forever, and yet they act like, oh, wow, we didn't know.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we're sorry, we've got half the world's population addicted now. So we're just going to cut you off, and then they overdose and die, because when they're cut off from the doctor, they're addicted, and you can't blame them. They are addicted. It is a difficult, difficult thing to do. I don't care who you are. You know, I think if Jesus Christ got addicted to opioids, he'd have a difficult time quitting.
I think you're 100% right.
So without divine intervention, that's for sure, you know. So
right.
Right. So
no, 100%.
These guys get addicted. They get addicted because doctors are just wantonly prescribing opioids for every little thing that's going on with a person. They get them addicted, and then they decide they want to cut them off because they hate people to keep coming into them for pain pills. You know, yeah, you're
right.
That sort. God, awesome. All they do, they're in my office shopping for pain pills. That's because you freaking hand them out like candy.
That's right. Stop giving them out as candy, and then you'll have less of that.
Yeah, it's almost like on Halloween, you turn your porch light on. On Halloween, you turn your porch light on, and you wonder why kids are asking for candy, right?
Right, right. Hello. or you got a big box of candy sitting there at the door, just waiting for these kids to show up, and you never turn your light on. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Just a different way.
Yeah. I know. It's just crazy. So anyway, so these poor people, they get addicted, then they get cut off or cut back. And they're addicted. They're getting sick. They're going through withdrawal symptoms. They need to do something. So what do? They go to the street and they find heroin for a lot cheaper because they can't afford full price for the medications because, you know, those are on the street too. But they can't afford it, and the doctor won't prescribe it anymore. And before you know it, they're dead. And we just saw how many people died from it, right?
Right.
And an ungodly number. What was it, 60,000? 64,000, something like that?
Yeah, so that was just overdose. Yeah, 64,000 people overdosed.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
Yep, crazy stuff.
I know. So here we go. Energy drinks can negatively impact the health of youth. Over half of Canadian youth and young adults who have consumed energy drinks have experienced negative health effects as a result of it. Of those reporting adverse health events, 24.7% reported experiencing a fast heartbeat. Interesting, huh?
Right, yeah.
24.1% reported difficulty sleeping. 18.3% reported experiencing headaches. A total of 5.1% reported nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. 5% sought medical attention, 3.6% reported experiencing chest pains, and 2% reported having a seizure, or 0.2%.
Yep.
Okay,
not surprising.
If this is what's happening to people, why the hell do we allow them to consume it?
I don't know. Why is it illegal to sell this stuff? I mean, it's just bad stuff. People don't see that though. I mean, the local convenience store down the road here would be up in arms if we tried to get rid of that stuff because they make a ton of money on it selling that stuff. It's got to be what they sell the most of. I swear that.
Yeah.
Sold it beer.
Know. God, you know, that's the one thing I've never done. I've never had a Red Bull or anything like that in my life.
No, me neither. No energy drinks.
It's just scary. It's just scary what we're doing to our youth, right?
Yep, it really is.
Let's see, what do I got here? Well, these are studies I'm going to do for my first other show pretty soon on coffee. Nursing baby is good for mom too. Breastfeeding found to reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke later in life.
Right.
Okay, it says the American Heart Association advises mothers to keep breastfeeding for 1 year. Meanwhile, the American Academy of Pediatrics suggests that they breastfeed for 1 year and that it's up to the mother when to cease to do so. The World Health Organization recommends women to breastfeed up to 2 years and beyond.
Yep.
Breastfeeding is highly beneficial for babies because when they are breastfed, they get sick less and have a lower risk of developing allergies. Well, that's pretty good all by itself, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
The risk of obesity and type 1 and 2 diabetes are lowered. The risk of sudden infant death syndrome is lowered. It reduces the risk of ear infections and gastroenteritis. It helps set them on the path for optimal brain development. So why are we even giving formula unless it's a prescription from a doctor, because the mom had to go to the doctor and just can't seem the nurse, and they've done everything they can, and now we're going to give them formula instead of just going to the store and seeing cans and cans and cans of the stuff being sold.
Right. Good question.
Well, it's a good thing I'm not in charge. I'd make it difficult for everybody to do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm right there with you.
I'd become a tyrant. No infant formula for you. No energy drinks. No infant formula.
No kidding.
They'd be calling me a fascist and everything.
Yep. That'd be just the nice stuff. That'd be only nice thing they call you.
You're right, Dr. Goforth. That would be just the nice thing they say.
Yeah.
You'd be getting death threats and everything, yeah.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, no kidding.
So here we go. I have something actually nice here to say today. Oh, my office staff has gone, oh, whoa, that's fun. You're going to be nice today?
Actually, I heard a little bit of her say something like that, too.
You heard that?
Oh, really? She's probably all, lay it on me, buddy.
We give her such a hard time all the time. I'm surprised that she doesn't gift to me more often.
Right.
It says, tea boosts your brain power, and the study finds it makes you happy, which boosts creativity.
All right. Well, that's good.
It says, tea is a beverage famous for having a plethora of benefits, the vast majority of them relating to health. As a recent study has shown, however, drinking tea can boost your creativity as well. Researchers from Peking University have discovered that this beloved hot beverage can improve mood and enhance cognitive function, thus improving creativity.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, no kidding, right? I wish I liked tea. I just don't like it. Thank goodness coffee's good for us, because I like to drink coffee.
Yeah, I'm happy about that, too. It works well for me.
Oh, I have. Okay, so here's another nice study. But it's a kind of a duh. It says fresh air, sunshine, and exercise really are good for your heart. Medical science proves heart disease prevention benefit of being outside.
Uh-huh.
So go outside, get some fresh air, natural sunlight, and exercise, and it's good for your heart.
Right.
Yeah, duh. Good. Duh. We should have did this study and got a million plus dollars to do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're just slacking.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little upset with myself, not working 24/7.
Yeah, right. I know, me too. I know I could squeeze another, a couple hours in that 24-hour day.
Okay, so I'm going to just tell people that I'm just reading. This is an article in a questionable source, so to speak, but I just thought it was interesting. It says, essential oils outperform a chemo drug. A former model lost her livelihood to extreme case of psoriasis after 15 years of trying every standard treatment available. A natural treatment saved your life.
Yeah.
Here's what it says. An aspiring British model who acknowledged being on the verge of suicide at one point because of psoriasis finally found relief with a commercial product that contains essential oils. This lady, Victoria Fine, age 34, suffered from a skin disorder which, during a breakout, covered her from head to toe for 15 years. The condition robbed her of her job, her modeling dreams, self-confidence, social life, and love life. In an attempt to alleviate her suffering, Fine tried various physician-prescribed creams with little improvement. Eliminating certain foods from her diet didn't help. Ultraviolet B therapy was initially effective, but only temporarily. She also took multiple antidepressants for pain control, among methotrexate and chemotherapy drugs. Fine realized that taking the prescription drugs amounted to trading one illness for another, and specifically the chemotherapy made her feel exhausted and nauseous. Anyway, go on. She found here it is. In 2017, at the suggestion of the manufacturer, she started using topical, I'm not going to say the product, which contain an array of natural essential oils, including safflower, castor, olive, sesame oil, wheat germ oil, lavender, rosemary, rose, and even primrose oil. And her skin is now 95%.
Nice.
I know, so anecdotal with one person.
Yep.
But I just thought I'd bring it up because it was pretty interesting.
Well, it's not hard to believe with as much failure rate as chemo has. So, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. So here we go. More on, I had a lot of stuff on breastfeeding and nursing this week. So here's another one. It says drink green tea while pregnant and breastfeeding. Research suggests that it protects the baby's liver from damage caused by bacteria.
Nice.
Yeah. Probably helps drinking green tea while nursing. Probably helps milk come in better, too. I'm not sure, but I would assume it would. Okay, so the flu, this season's flu is officially now classified as an epidemic, as the rate of young children requiring hospitalization doubles in a week, and the CDC warns new strains are emerging. Yeah, anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of sick people with the flu right now. I don't want to go into too many of the details, because getting the weeds really quick when you start talking about that. Let's see. I'll skip that. Oh, this is interesting. Is techno farming going to replace chemical farming? Some farmers are switching from herbicides to robots to weed their problems.
Huh.
So right now they're version 1.0. They're not very good, but they're starting to get robots to be able to help with farming and weeding. So the robotic weeders that are sold on the market are priced between $120,000 and $175,000. So they're a bit overpriced now, but they're starting to change things. People are starting to buy them, starting to utilize them, starting to look at them.
Huh.
Yeah, I know. Oh, here we go. This is an interesting headline. It says, the medical establishment is finally accepting it. Diabetes can be reversed, according to a groundbreaking new study. Let's see. Where is it? Says, there's plenty that the pharmaceutical industry doesn't want you to know. And one of those, inconvenient truths, just got a huge credibility boost and renewed attention as a study shows that it is possible to reverse type 2 diabetes through weight management alone.
Yep.
So a groundbreaking study that was published in The Lancet shows just how effective weight management can be when it comes to treating the disease. In an open-label and cluster randomized study, nearly 300 patients who had received the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes within the past 6 years were studied. Participants were anywhere from 20 to 65, and they had a starting body mass index values in the range of 27 to 45. After being randomized in one of two groups, the participants either went through the counterweight plus program to lose weight or received best practice care as part of the control group. Those in the counterweight plus program were given a diet that was very low in calories from anywhere to 3 to 5 months. They ate around 850 calories a day. This was followed by a food reintroduction program that ran for about 2 to 8 weeks. The people in the group stopped taking anti-diabetic medications as well as those that lower blood pressure at the start of the trial. Within a year, half the participants could no longer be considered diabetic and no longer needed their medication. Roughly one-fourth of the participants had lost 15 kilograms or more of weight, and around half maintained weight loss for more than 10 kilos. Anyway.
Nice.
So I remember at a high school reunion many, many years ago, was with my best friend from high school, Eric, in case Eric's listening. And we went to see his sister. His sister worked, I think, for the American Diabetes Association. And we had a little bit of an argument where we said there's no cure for diabetes. And I said, yes, there is. And she goes, oh, that's called patient control. You know what I mean? Instead of being cured.
Uh-huh.
They never give you cure. You're just dietarily controlling it. Well, we'll just call it, it's possible to reverse it, because we do have science out there that shows they can do it. And I told her, I've done it before with people. So I know it can be cured. No, it's just diet control.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, why do we gain weight gain in winter? Or why do we gain weight in the wintertime? Breakthrough study reveals less time in the sun promotes fat storage, as well as making us deficient in vitamin D.
Right.
We kind of knew that. We talked about that.
Yeah. Cool.
Alabama declares flu outbreak emergency as the vaccine failure becomes obvious to everyone.
Finally.
Yeah, I know. Gosh. I know.
Sure does take them a long time.
I know. They just can't admit it.
Uh-huh.
Let's see, what do I got? Here's another one on vaccines. Despite vaccine mandates, California's public health system is collapsing due to the common cold. Hospitals are under the siege from masses of sick people.
Yeah,
they are. They're overwhelmed. Which, we read a couple of things about that not too long ago, too, about they're putting off other procedures because the emergency rooms are so full of people with a cold and flu, right?
Right.
Where's my, okay. Where's all my studies here? There's some more. A diet rich in apples and tomatoes may help repair the lungs in ex-smokers. So isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Apples and tomatoes. So, well, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Well, it actually helps repair your lungs after you quit smoking.
Nice.
I know.
I wonder if that's the new wave of apples with so much sugar in them, though.
You know, probably. It's still probably okay. There's probably still a lot of stuff in apples that makes it okay. But I'm with you. You know, there's a lot of sugar in the stuff. But, you know, you can also go eat the sour apples, too. Which, God,
right.
You remember when we were kids, Dr. Goforth, the apples are not quite ripe on the tree. We're going out and eating kind of green apples, just eating so many of them.
Uh-huh. Yep. Been there, I remember it.
Yeah. And you know, and those apples that we grew outside, even if they were the sweet kind, they were never as sweet as the ones you get in the store. Probably because we picked them a little early, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it's even a little bit better, in my opinion, because it's, you know, you get the, just the freshness of it, I think, you know.
Oh, okay, so here we go. Here's a study. I found this one interesting. It says tuberculosis drugs work better with vitamin C.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know.
That's interesting.
Okay. Yeah, well, I've seen it before. Not this, not tuberculosis. I've seen other things that are enhanced when you use vitamin C, right?
Right.
I remember a study years ago in Australia when they mandated vaccines for Aborigines. And the Aborigine kids are lined up getting vaccines, and a bunch of them were dying, right? And one medical doctor, because there's always brilliant doctors out there, as much as we criticize them, there's a lot of brilliant ones out there, too.
Right.
One brilliant medical doctor goes, nah, your immune systems are too compromised already. We want you to take high doses of vitamin C for, I don't remember how long he did it, but have them take high doses of vitamin C, and then we'll vaccinate you. And then they quit dying.
Right.
And it also only makes sense, right? Toxicity and deficiency is the cause of all of the problems. Maybe all of us are a little bit low in vitamin C anyway, and if we stick drugs in you, you know, if your body has to process them and deal with them, it needs extra vitamin C in order to help with it. So it doesn't surprise me that we can do it. I imagine if we took them all, even with a multiple vitamin or even fish oil and probiotics, and we did the stuff and got our body sufficient, I bet you almost all medications would just work better.
I'm sure.
Unless, yeah, you know, they would. We'll just have to do a study on that.
Yep.
Right?
Sounds good to me.
Oh, so Dr. Goforth, are you stressed out? From the University
Always.
Of British Columbia, I got a solution for you.
Okay.
Try smelling your partner's shirt.
My partner's shirt, huh? I do every time I hug her.
Yeah. Grab her pits really good and give a good whiff. It says, the scent of a romantic partner can help lower stress. New psychology research have found. Okay, women feel calmer after being exposed to their male partner's scent. But being exposed to a stranger's scent had the opposite effect and raised levels of the stress hormone cortisol.
Well, that makes sense.
You know, so I wonder, so this is for women. They got to smell their partner's scent. So I wonder if you if you pull the sheet over her head.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work out so well.
I wonder if that'll, I wonder if that'll raise cortisol levels.
Yeah, I think it would raise divorce rates.
So what, we got to do it. We got to get some public funding and do that research.
Yeah, that's right. That's funny. Yeah, we need to do that one.
We could videotape the whole research, too, and we could publish it on YouTube and make money that way, too, right?
Yep, right. Good idea.
Funny. Oh, God.
Uh-huh.
I know. I can't help it. Sometimes I'm still 7 years old. My brain goes there.
Oh, hey, I'm right there with you. Most men, you know. Most of us are that way, I think.
Yeah.
Some stuff's just funny.
So here we go. Again, another one on race here. It says, depression in black adolescents requires a different treatment. Rutgers University scholar studies how black teens express depression. It says, black adolescents express depression symptoms differently than people from their age and racial groups, requiring that clinicians take this into account when developing treatment plans. I'm not going to get into too many details of the study. I just found it interesting in this world where everything's politically correct one way or another that we are finding that there are differences between age groups, genders, and races.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Uh-huh, I know. Oh, listen. Oh, this was interesting from the Journal of Experimental Psychology. It says emotions are not for the powerful. It says a new international study found that people with high social status are perceived as insincere when they apologize for a transgression.
Huh.
This perception applies to the world of business and work, and it's reasonable to assume it applies to politicians too. The more senior they are, the less authentic their emotions are perceived as being, says one of the authors of the study. So, you know, it's interesting. So maybe that's one of the reasons why you find politicians who do something wrong don't get up there and apologize, because they're damned if they do and damned if they don't, right? So if they apologize,
right,
they go, well, that's not sincere, and it was worse having given an apology than ignoring it.
Right. Right. Yep, that makes sense to me, too. I was thinking about that crazy thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Let's see. I got a whole bunch of stuff on exercise here. I actually got a whole bunch of stuff. Okay. The effects of tramadol on cognitive and sports performance, a study, University of Grenada. A first randomized controlled study studied the effects of tramadol on cognitive and sports performance has been completed. What does it say? Tramadol is an opioid pain relief medication mainly used to treat moderate to severe pain, such as backache and postoperative pain. Although it is not yet included in the list of banned substances by the World Anti-Doping Agency, the drug has generated significant media interest. Increasing numbers of professional cyclists and team members are coming forward about the frequent use of tramadol in the sport to reduce pain perception despite the drug's adverse effects. The most notable side effects are drowsiness and loss of concentration, and along with reduced responsiveness to stimuli, which in turn may be causing falls in perspective. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Oh boy, got sneezing. Anyway, it also may cause falls in professional cycling. Although the drug is commonly suspected as an underlying cause of falls, until now no hard evidence has been provided concerning its effects on physical and cognitive function. It doesn't really say here what it does. It just says they studied it. Dang it, I thought it would say what it does. Oh well, that's what I get for not reading the whole article. But at least they're looking at stuff. Maybe they'll ban more stuff as they find out stuff doesn't work for everything. All
right.
Here's one from December. It says, Florida has reported more mumps cases in 2017 than the last 5 years combined.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if I even... It's only been 56 cases a month, but that's enough to scare them, even though
yep.
64,000 deaths a year of from opioids doesn't scare them.
Right. I know. It's crazy.
I know. To me, it's totally crazy. Let's see. What do I got here? Let's see. This one I think we talked about. It says health risks linked to electromagnetic field exposure. Study of real-world exposure to non-ionizing radiation from metallic fields in pregnant women found a significantly higher rate of miscarriage, providing new evidence regarding the potential health risks. That's from like things like cell phones, E3 players,
right.
Stuff like that. I think we talked about it before.
Yeah, I think so.
It has been in the news quite a little bit, so I was curious about it. Well, I didn't print out this whole study because I didn't want to print right. But here's something interesting. It says, craving carbs, blame your brain. A Japanese study found that it's the brain that causes you to crave carbs.
Okay.
That's a very interesting article. Yeah. Blame your brain. Don't know why you said it. Oh, another case of rare side effects in children who take Tamiflu. Okay. And what it is, it's a 6-year-old girl who tried to jump out of a window after taking an anti-influenza drug. She's now back to normal, but her family wasn't alone. She said she was hallucinating, bugs on her body, and a devil's voice in her ear. Right, so hallucinations are a rare side effect from the Tamiflu thing, right? So the girl tried to kill herself. It says here the FDA has listed 559 cases of hallucinations from Tamiflu since 2009. And here's the interesting thing about that. I now remember why I printed it out. I want to do it. You know, we've read study after study and report after report of how many cases are actually out there. Like if they report 559 cases are reported,
uh-huh.
How many are actually out there that are unreported?
Right.
Their
yep.
estimates
That's
are only about 10% of the their estimates are about 10% of the cases actually get reported, and so there's another 90% that aren't. So you can go out there and say there are like 5,000 cases of people are suffering hallucinations.
Right.
Which go that's quite a little bit, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so I got one. I think I got one last one I want to talk about. It's in my. There you go. Last one. So, a new study shows that the flu can actually be spread by just breathing.
Okay.
So.
Yeah,
I know. So, you know, we always was like, people, you got to cover your mouth and nose because of it causes little droplets to form, and that's what causes it. Now they're finding out it's just simply breathing. It's pretty, it's pretty prevalent, right? Wonder how it spreads so quickly and so fast, like colds and the flu, right? It's like, wow. So what do we do now? If you get a flu, you put a mask on? Well, probably, right?
Seems reasonable.
Yeah, it seems reasonable to me, and we probably should be have these little masks in schools so kids cover up, right? We probably should be doing that. Because, anyway. I think I'm done, Dr. G.
All right.
My brain just started to fry when I was thinking about that. Yeah, my brain was just starting to fry a little bit, going, I got a mess in my office that needs to be cleaned up, straightened out, and I'm looking at my office lady working her butt off trying to clean it up while I'm on my radio, and I'm feeling a little guilty that she needs some help. So,
what you pay her for.
Did you hear her? She goes, yeah, sure. You don't feel guilty about anything. You just make me do all the hard stuff while you sit back and put your feet up on the desk and eat bonbons.
Yeah, that's right.
I know, that's telling me. She says, Yeah. You know, we're going to have to bring her on a radio show one of these days since she speaks up so much now. She's getting opinionated. You know what I mean? She's getting awfully opinionated.
I do know what you mean.
I know.
You're going to have to start,
I think we will. I think when we get our equipment up and running, fixed again, instead of cell phones, we might just have her come on for one question or two, just to get her used to speaking in public a little bit, because everybody loves her, right? So it's like we should put her out there, but then she'll get too big for her brain. They'll see,
yeah, that's what's gonna happen too. So you got to get me on there again. I got to tell these people what's going on over here.
Yeah, exactly. I got to tell them the truth. You guys are so full of it. Anyway.
Right?
That's going to be the end of it. So here we go. That concludes today's show. So until next time,
here's to your health.